Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events on this fine Friday, September 6, 2013. Once again, thank you for joining us this afternoon, and lots to talk about today, so we're going to get right to the markets, get an update on the prices today in gold and silver. Of course, we're going to be talking about Syria. We're also going to be talking, we're going to get to Poland today. We're going to Poland today, little girls and boys. So make sure you stay tuned. Gold today was no little girl or boy there. It was up $21, but still below the $1,400 at $1,390. Silver was up 65 cents today at $23.96. Platinum up $7 at $1,498, and palladium was up $9 at $700. USDX today, slightly weaker, down 0.48 at 82.16. Crude oil, up 110 at 1.93. And the stock market today, it's very interesting on the markets today. It was about 45 minutes into trading, and online I just go to CNN Money to pick up what the prices are doing, and I noticed on one side it said that the Dow was down over 100 points. Well, I went to CNN Money to see what the rest of the markets were doing, and they were still showing the futures numbers, which were up 72. So it was just a very interesting, here you had the market down 110, but a mainstream website was still showing the positive on the futures. So it wasn't done by mistake, folks. But the Dow right now closed 14 points at 14,922. The NASDAQ basically unchanged, 36.60. Not a lot of change in the S&P either, 16.55. The 10-year yield, that softened a little bit today, down 0.04 at 2.94. Hi, Al.
Hi, Melody. It is interesting that, I'm looking at the Kitco markets, a report on the market, and it says index data is delayed 30 minutes on the Dow Jones, NASDAQ, U.S. dollar index, crude oil, and so on. And they're about 15 minutes on precious metals. And I wonder sometimes, is that delay just, are there technical reasons for that delay? Or are there other reasons involved? What I mean by that in an electronic age, as soon as the numbers change, wherever they change, there should be an automatic change. How hard is it to have that change show up on the Kitco's website right then?
Well, lots of times for up-to-the-minute actual pricing. Usually you have to pay for that service. A lot of these websites like Kitco and stuff, they don't have to pay for it, you know. But anyway, but when you go to the initial open, you do have updated markets. This was not a delayed reporting of the numbers because you're going to have an open number. You know, markets open, and you're going to have an open number, even though it's delayed. And even if you hit updates, usually that will bring it up to date. It only updates it. Usually a lot of the websites, it will only it'll be updated on its own in 15 minutes. But if you usually hit the update button, it'll update it automatically to the moment. So even my website has a little bit of a delay for the pricing. And but usually the delays are so the changes are between a 10-minute and a 15-minute can be drastic. But most of the time, 99% of the time, it's just a tiny change. But
yeah, but, you know, the truth of the matter is the way they trade by means of computers right now, they can make things happen of a fraction of a percent of change over a period of just a couple of seconds is enough to make a substantial profit or loss. Well, and if you're not right there on top of the market on an almost instantaneous basis, you have you're at a great disadvantage competing against these computer trading programs.
There's actually trading companies that position their offices. I believe I read that it was in West not West Virginia, but Virginia, maybe D.C., even New York, I'm not sure which state, where they actually position and open offices next to these where reports are given.
Yeah.
And so they they're trying to buy just a few seconds of time. By having those reports just by a few seconds,
It's millions of dollars. It's fractions of a second, and they are trying to locate their facilities physically closer to the markets that they're trying to follow.
Exactly.
Because by shortening the length of the internet cable from the market they're trying to follow to their office, they actually trim a few thousandths of a second off the amount of time it takes the data to go from the market until it gets to these traders, and that few thousandths of a second is enough to give them a trading advantage. So they don't want their facility to be located six states away, halfway across the country. You know, you and I can talk on this program right now, and you're in Pennsylvania, I'm in Texas, and there's no perceived delay in our conversation. But the delay between having an office that's located in Texas as compared to a market that's located in New York City is sufficient, even though you wouldn't pick up on it with speech. It's sufficient to make a difference in how much profits you can make. Therefore, they seek to locate their offices, not in Texas, but locate them as close to the New York City market as is possible, just to shorten the length of the internet cable.
So it kind of... For those who dabble in the stock market, you know, you don't have a chance.
Yeah, I know.
I mean,
that's what it comes down
to. It's all against you, folks.
If you're trading against these computerized programs.
Yeah, good luck. We did have a job report today that came out, and, of course, that raised a little bit of doubt whether the Federal Reserve would or should be pulling back on the stimulus program in the next couple of weeks. There was a large drop in the share of Americans who are either working or looking for work, and this measure, most everyone knows, is the labor force participation rate. Actually, it was at its lowest level since 1978. You had earlier estimates of job growth in July and June. They were also revised sharply downward. And most of that hiring over the summer months, which we have talked about on this program, of course, was driven mainly by low-wage sectors, retail, food, and health care. So I guess they meet on the 18th, the Federal Reserve governors meet to see if they're going to begin to taper. And but the number of payroll jobs added in August was 169,000, close to the average pace of hiring over the last year, and the unemployment rate edged down 7.3% from 7.4%. And what's interesting is because I saw this one comment here about Ben Bernanke was looking to taper from the stimulus if the unemployment rate, this article, which was actually produced by the New York Times, said that the unemployment rate had to get close to 7. If I remember correctly, he said 6. And so I don't know if who made the adjustment, where they were wrong or whatever. But as of August, there were 7.9 million Americans who wanted to work full-time but could only find part-time work. When these workers and people who want a job but have stopped looking are included, you're looking at a total unemployment rate of 13.7%. And, you know, you can argue why that labor force participation rate remains so low. We do have an aging population, and you do have workers that are sitting on the sidelines, and your teens. There aren't as many teens. As we all know, our birth rate is being reduced, so there are not as many of those that are available to work. But
you know, there's a flip side on that, though, and I did an article on this. I wrote an article. I called it Big. Back in the 1990s, it would go back now. Oh, it's close to 20 years ago that I wrote the article. But it was back before the internet. And if you wanted research done, you didn't Google information on the internet. You had to call the Dallas Public Library. And they had researchers down there. And you'd call them up and you'd say, well, what was this number for 1943? Or what was this or what was that? And they would go chase around the library and they'd have an answer for you in 5-10 minutes. So it was a wonderful service at the time, particularly. It seems hard to believe it seemed great at the time, and now right now it seems archaic. Just 15, 20 years later, it seems archaic. But I call them up and I ask them, what was the employment rate? It was the first time I'd begun to realize that you don't just want to participate, you don't want to focus on the unemployment rate. It's good to focus on the participation rate. All right? It's good to find out how many people are actually working. And I asked them, what was the employment rate back in 1950 when I was a little boy? And they said it was about 30%. About 30% of the people had jobs. And at that point, I'm calling about 1993, 94, the employment rate then was about 55% of the American people had jobs. So we'd gone from 30% to 55%. And people would at first glance and say, well, that's great. We should be wealthier now because we've got more people working. And in fact, by watching that participation rate go up, it wasn't evidence that we were becoming more prosperous. It was evidence we were becoming less prosperous. In 1950, we were the wealthiest country on the face of the earth, and only 30% of the people had jobs. And that means that my dad could make enough money all by himself. He made enough money where my mom could stay home and afford and raise me and my sister. One man could support two other people on average besides himself. What's happened since then is the government has continued to raise taxes and raise regulations to where my dad used to be able to take home 85 to 90 cents out of every dollar he earned. Back in 1950. Today, young man is taking home maybe 40 cents out of every dollar he earns. It's part of the reason why we have to have more people working today. We have to have a higher participation rate because the actual take-home pay is being reduced by taxes, regulations, and whatever, where it takes two people today to generate a standard of living that my dad could generate all by himself back in 1950. So my point is, if you want one part of the point, one of the illustrations of the point, if you want to see full employment, go to Mexico. Mexico has full employment. And the evidence of this is you can walk down the street in Mexico City, and every street you're going to see a little girl, year and a half, 2 years old, little dirty face, little dirty dress. She's standing there on a street corner. She's got a little box of Chiclets. She is selling Chiclets. When you put two-year-old children to work, that's evidence of full employment. And full employment All right, we've got almost 100% of the population has to have some kind of job if it's only picking through the rags and the junk looking for something that you can sell or eat. That's full employment, and it's evidence of poverty. It's not evidence of wealth. When we are wealthy, you only need a few people working to support those who are not. Right? So it's a peculiar situation. They have taxed us into a position where initially my dad made enough money to support the wife and kids. Over time, government starts raising taxes. Pretty soon, mom says, well, we can't make ends meet exactly. Why don't I take a job at McDonald's? I'll work at McDonald's for a night or two every week, and it'll make up the difference. And the government says, hooray, we've created another job.
But it's also inflation now.
What they've created is poverty. It forces people to go to work by raising taxes and diminishing their take-home pay. Go ahead.
It's just not raising taxes now. It's inflation. It's inflation
because
of our currency is not back. I looked at it as two different things.
No, I understand. I won't say it's identically the same, but you're exactly right. By means of inflation, we are making less and less money, and as a result, more of us have to have jobs. When my dad was working, making enough to support the family all by himself, my mother could afford to get involved in charitable activities. She had time, right? She could afford these things. There was leisure where we could do things. As government increases taxes, increases regulation, increases inflation, we have less take-home pay. And the result is that people who previously had time and leisure, not just to goof off, but also to engage in charitable activities or whatever, public activities, they got to work. And it used to be they had the old Virginia Slims commercials. Many of you may remember, some of you may remember them. And it was, you come a long way, baby, and talking about how women are breaking into the workforce as if this is a great step forward. Women are breaking into the workforce because their rights are expanded. Women are breaking into the workforce because the government has taxed men to a point where we can't afford a family. Women have to work. It's not that you get to work. You have to work because government is raising taxes, and other costs. And as a result, to escape poverty, more and more of us have to work. First, my dad works. Then later my mom takes a part-time job, then a full-time job. Eventually all of us, the kids are even working, and that's what they do in Mexico with full-time employment. So, this is complex stuff, and it's, you know, we would be better off if I don't want more people working in this country. I want more take-home pay. I don't want the government to create more jobs. I want the government to allow us to have more take-home pay. Again, my dad got to keep 85, 90 cents out of every dollar he earned back in 1950. Today, young man gets to keep maybe 40 cents. Take all the taxes, hidden taxes, local, state, and federal. Kids keeping maybe 40 cents on the dollar. He can't afford a family. He's being taxed into poverty. Huh? So, look at the employment rate and consider there's more to it. You know, there's more to it. There's other sides to this coin, and creating more jobs is not the solution to our problem. Creating more take-home pay is the solution to our prosperity problem. All right.
Is it time for me now?
Yes, it's your turn now. We have
what I wanted
what's
to
happened.
Say
we have a minute
problem.
Until we take the break. And I don't have anything else to say, so now you have to think of something.
Well, no, what I wanted to say also was once you started to have the family, the mother, the children, and the father all working, it really was the beginning of the breakdown of the family unit.
No.
You didn't have your mother. So there's a whole, it's a much bigger picture and so many other issues that come into play when you have this, when you have everyone in the family that has to work to survive.
Right.
Now, of course, we have to look at, you know, are they living within their means? Now, if they lived within their means and we didn't have the consumerism that's going on, you know, maybe we wouldn't need to have as much money in order to survive. Look at Christmases nowadays. At Christmas time when we were children, we got what we needed, not what we wanted. We got underwear and socks. Today they have, you know, children, parents spend upwards of thousands and thousands of dollars on their children.
Yeah, it becomes ridiculous. They give them what they need, which is, nowadays, it's probably a condom dispenser. I'm Alfred Addisk. This is Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here at Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Melody has a special to announce. I don't know if it's a special so much as it is a drawing.
Yes. Well, you know, if last time we had a drawing or we gave away some free gold was back in December, so I guess it's time to do it again. For the whole month of September, every completed trade, you're going to have your name put into a drawing, and we're going to have a drawing at the end of the month. And you will be able to win, at this point so far, just a Mint State 62 $10 gold piece that is valued at almost $1,000. And maybe we'll have a second drawing, we will have a second drawing for a tube of 1 ounce silver eagle. So there'll be two separate drawings, one for an Mint State 62 $10 gold piece. The second drawing will be for a tube of 2013 silver eagle. So that's 20 ounces of silver. And it will be on all completed trades for the month of September. So if you made a trade, we were closed on Mondays, on Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, we did go back and we put your name, wrote your name down So you will also be included in the trade. On trades on the 30th, so I know the funds won't, we won't have the funds by the 1st, but your name will still go into the basket or the, whatever you want to call it, the basket, the jar, or the
drawer. Hat.
The hat.
The hat, yes.
We'll go into the hat.
We'll be using, we may even be using a sombrero.
No, we will not.
Well, if the
no,
hat will be big
no,
enough,
we
we'll
not.
Get a sombrero.
No, we will get a bucket. We'll use a bucket that we ship bags of silver in. So so that's a pretty neat special. The Mint State 62 $10 gold piece is almost $1,000. And, of course, silver eagles, the price on those for a tube is over $500. So.
All right. Well, it sounds
and
good.
And if you have any questions,
the drawing
can...
will be on the 1st of
October. The drawing will be conducted by my staff, so I won't have any part in it. I will monitor it, but they will do the actual drawing of the names. If you have any questions, call us at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And we have great prices on all our gold and silver. Silver Eagles, we got some beautiful Morgan silver dollars in, the older silver dollars. We have 1921s and pre-21s. Silver Eagles, we got 90% quarters on the silver. We have boxes of Silver Eagles where you can get a really good deal on those. We also include shipping on our larger orders of Silver Eagles. For gold, all your bullion coins, $20 gold pieces are a steal at this point in time. And you can't listen to a lot of these folks out there who say now's not the time to buy gold, and they try to put you in shares, or they try to put you in ETFs, they try to put you in overseas. Earlier this week, Al and I came up, we actually saw an executive order. We didn't talk about it much because we didn't have a chance to review it, but there was actually a short-term executive order coming from Kennedy to where he actually, it prohibited owning gold coins overseas. So to me, that brought up a lot of questions on offshore. So we'll try to get to that maybe next week. But so there's a lot of things to talk about when you're looking to preserve your wealth. And we're certainly in times of uncertainty. The war in Syria can go either way. It seems that we're going to be doing something. Al, from what I read about Obama today, he's bent on doing something. And regardless of what Congress says, it looks like looks like they are looking to vote no, but he is still rattling the or beating the war drums.
Well, we have one article here that where Obama is warning that if we don't bomb Syria, it will adversely affect the credibility of the world, the United Nations. It will adversely affect the credibility of the United States. It will adversely affect everybody's credibility. He didn't neglect it. He neglected to mention his own credibility, of course, and that's what's really going to be hurt here. And Obama is going to learn. He's going to lose some of his own credibility because he's in over his head and kind of gone off half cocked. And perhaps he thought he could make this happen, you know, and it's at least doubtful that he's going to be able to pull it off. Maybe he'll get Congress to go along with him. Maybe he won't. It remains to be seen. But it's not a slam dunk. And there have been things lost to Obama as a consequence. Prior to this, he was essentially claiming that he had unilateral power, that he could start a war when he wanted to or bomb people whenever he wanted. And he didn't need Congress. Now he says he needs Congress. In doing that, he's essentially conceded that the Constitution has some validity. He is may perhaps not a true dictator yet. And it has been a debacle so far. It hasn't gone well for the president. And he's claiming everyone else's credibility is going to be lost if we don't bomb Syria. But I think the truth of the matter is he will be the primary victim of lost credibility. And I think this goes to the idea of Obama, is he already a lame duck? You know, a lot of people sit back and say you don't get to be a lame duck until you're in the last year of your administration, or maybe even 2 years. But there's a chance that Obama's already something of a lame duck. It may be that he's already just lost so much authority. He's now been discredited in a way where people just kind of laugh and snicker. And I don't know if he's still formidable and dangerous, or he's just kind of silly and frivolous. And he may, I'm not suggesting that the man doesn't have a capacity for significant action, unilateral action. He can still send in the drones when he feels like it, apparently. But he's been diminished in the last month or 6 weeks over the drone issue, for one, and now his ability to inspire war in Syria. That would be another one. And one of the articles that we have, matter of fact, is they're complaining that Obama is going to, here it is, it's from, according to the Washington-based publication Politico, President Obama doesn't have the votes in the House of Representatives to secure a win for his plan to attack Syria, with large-scale opposition among Republicans and lukewarm backing among Democrats. If the House voted today on a resolution to attack Syria, President Barack Obama would lose, and lose big. And that would represent a dramatic failure. This is from Politico. That would represent a dramatic failure for Obama, and once again prove that his sway over Congress is extraordinarily limited. The loss would have serious reverberations throughout the next 3 months, when Obama faces off against Congress in a series of high-stakes fiscal battles. Now, this is so bizarre. What they're saying, by implication, in this article from Politico, a Washington publication, they are saying that Obama needs to succeed in his attempt to bomb Syria in order to build up his credibility for the next 3 months of arguing with Congress over fiscal issues. That is a kind of madness. It's a kind of insanity. I'm not saying that this, in fact, is Obama's motivation, but this is the report from Politico. And they are saying Obama needs to bomb Syria so he is better able to intimidate Congress. That's essentially what they're saying. This is madness. This is like saying I need to go beat somebody up or shoot them out on the street in order to get along better with my wife. You can't. This is just craziness, and it's another illustration of a kind of madness that seems to have seized our country. Oh. So what else, Melody?
Well, I think there's a lot of speculation out there, and certainly a lot of scenarios that we can place to the Syria. And I don't think Obama. Part of me wants to agree with you about Obama being a lame duck, but on the other hand, as you mentioned, he is very dangerous, and I wouldn't call him a lame duck until after 2016 to see who the next president is. And then I can look back and see whether he was a lame duck or not. I think both him and Eric Holder, they need to be impeached. They certainly have impeachable offenses against them, they do need to be thrown out. But that's another story. We know that certainly won't get done, because we know what type of groups committees, they just drag it out until the election, and or it'll be something along the lines of Clinton. But the reason Syria is so important also is, yes, I mean, there's many, many lives to be lost and so forth, but also how is that going to affect world economies? How is it going to affect the listeners' money? And they've done an extremely fine job of keeping things together. I believe what normally would have had gold up $200, the stock market down 5 to 1,000 points, and certainly a lot of oil probably should be trading at 120. So it is, they've been able to hold these markets together. However, this could be as simple as doing an aspirin factory, or it could have a lot worse
Once you get into it, though, where does it end?
Where does it end?
I mean, we get into this thing the same way we got into Afghanistan, and we got into Iraq, and it was 8.5 years before we got out of Iraq. And for what? For weapons of mass destruction. There weren't any weapons of mass destruction. Still, we stayed for 8.5 years. It's completely wrong. It's unjustifiable. And when we sit back, everyone is curious about what will the economic impact be. That's people's primary, that appears to be people's primary interest. How is this going to affect our pocketbooks? And the truth of the matter is you can't look at it from that perspective. You have to sit back and say, is it right to go murder some people? Regardless of whether it's profitable for us or not, it's not about the economy. It's about a question of moral right and wrong. What is our reason to bomb Syria? And the reason is that it's alleged that the Syrian government used some poisonous gas on its own people and allegedly 1,400 died. That's the justification. But there are debates, and it's not absolutely clear who used the poisonous gas. There's been at least one rebel entity that said, no, they're the ones that did it. And there have been others. It makes better sense to suppose that the rebels released the poisonous gas than the government. And there's even been one report that the rebels released it by accident because they were handling it. They didn't know how to handle it. And they wound up accidentally releasing poisonous gas. So who knows what's really going on? But if you don't know, again, there is reasonable doubt. And it's like being a jury in a murder trial. As much as we may dislike the defendant, the fact is, if we don't have solid evidence that the defendant actually killed somebody, if there is reasonable doubt, then we have to turn them loose. We have a moral obligation. Even if that wouldn't be in our best financial interest, we still have that moral obligation. And people have, it's part of the madness that the world has embraced. And we have shifted from being a nation to being an economy. In a nation, again, we have moral values. We have questions of right and wrong. In an economy, with questions of profit and loss. The system of values becomes, is it profitable or not? If it's profitable, we do it. If it's not profitable, we don't do it in an economy. In a nation, it's a different system of values. We ultimately include right and wrong in the nation. And we allow that to control. We don't do things, even if they're profitable, we don't do them if they're wrong. It's a peculiar and complex problem, and we've all kind of stumbled into it, succumbed to it to some extent. But we have to start looking at this country as a nation once again, and not as an economy. And again, the reason is because the two kinds of entities have completely different systems of values. You want to treat everything as a basis of economics, then profit and loss is the only criteria. Under those circumstances, dealing drugs is good. You make money. Being a prostitute, good. You make money. All right? Being a professional hitman, good. You make money. That's all. It's no longer a question of moral right and wrong. Get into that economy, and we head in directions that are dangerous to all of us. So. Wow.
Unfortunately, we know it's never about moral right or wrong. It is all about money. And unfortunately, we are a nation, an economy nation, but we're also a godless nation.
Well,
A lot of us.
We are not godly. We don't even give lip service to the extent that we did back 20, 40, 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We have lost our spiritual foundation, and that's something that's inherent in national values. It's irrelevant in economic values. Nobody cares if you're a Catholic, a Muslim, or a Jew in an economy. And some people say, well, that's a good thing, but there are losses that are going to be experienced. If you want to lose your capacity for a spiritual foundation, if you want to lose that spiritual foundation in order to embrace your economy, good luck with that, because you're going to have dangerous people on the streets. It's going to be hard for everybody before we're done with that. Again, I'm Alfred Adiskin, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival Programs, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. We're going to take a break for a couple more commercial announcements. We'll be back shortly. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku-band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
We got a question in from Richard. What is so significant about the 10-year bond going over 3%? Do they have to pay out derivatives insurance or what?
Well, that's, first off, that's roughly correct, and the danger is that we have hundreds of trillions of dollars of derivatives that are insuring against a rise in interest rates. These derivatives have no intrinsic value, and yet they are valued at, in the United States, there's allegedly about $800 trillion in derivatives around the world, and according to one source, about $300 trillion worth of derivatives here in the United States. They are intrinsically worthless, and yet they're valued at $300 trillion. All by itself, this has to make you wonder, how that $300 trillion is four times the size of the total gross domestic product for the world. And yet we have $300 trillion in derivatives. The significance of derivatives is that they are part of it. Part of the significance is that they are so massive in terms of their number, $300 trillion, here in the United States, that if anything triggers these derivatives, they are essentially insurance policies, and many of them are tied to interest rates. If a man wants to invest in bonds, for example, if the interest rates go down, he's going to make more money on his bonds. If the interest rates go up, he's going to make less money on his bonds. Smart investors hedge their purchase of bonds, big investors, big boys. They hedge the purchase of bonds by taking out derivatives. Derivatives are a kind of insurance policy, and they essentially specify that if the interest rate rises beyond a certain level and these bond investors begin to lose money in bonds, then the derivative people, the people who sold them derivatives, will pay off on the losses. Right? They do this in order to make sure that heads they win, tails the other guy loses. It's a way of effectively guaranteeing that you're going to make money. The problem is all the big boys are trying it, and the result is we have $300 trillion worth of derivatives in this country alone, and the number is incomprehensible. It's a kind of madness. It's illusory. It can't be real. It's a legal fiction, and yet it's there. And these derivatives can't be paid. You understand, there's so the banks have sold so many derivatives. It's like selling insurance policies. It's like selling insurance policies against a house being hit by an asteroid. Everybody figured there was so little probability that anyone would ever see an asteroid come down that you could make a fortune selling these insurance policies against asteroids because being hit by a meteor, because it would never happen. But now we've reached a point where the world is going through a meteor storm. And all of a sudden, it looks like a lot of places are going to be hit by meteors, figuratively speaking. And as a result, the banks can't possibly make good on all these derivatives. Now, if the interest rate rises above a certain level, and the question is referred to 3%, I don't know what the trigger point is on the interest rate scale. It might be 3%, it might be 5%. I don't know what it is. And it may vary from derivative. One man's derivative might be for 3%, another one might be for 4%, another one might be 5%. They vary. But cumulatively, what's the average? And once they trigger the loss in bonds and cause the banks to pay off on derivatives, and the banks have to admit, gee, we don't have the money, then these trillions of dollars of derivatives will be shown to be what they are, intrinsically worthless. And when they are, many of them are being used as collateral in banks under fractional reserve banking, where if you could take a derivative that had a presumed value of, say, $10 trillion, well, it could be the basis for lending $100 trillion under fractional reserve banking. If it turns out that $10 trillion derivative, the banks say, oh, guess what? We can't make the payment. Guess what? It means that all of the loans that were based on this derivative, or perhaps even the bonds that the derivative was allegedly guaranteed, those loans might have to be pulled in by the bankers. It means that businesses would stop and new construction projects would stop and people who thought they had a job would be suddenly unemployed. We live in a society that has become so interconnected and so interdependent that if one of us screws up, the whole thing can collapse. One little thing goes wrong. You may remember when they shut down the power grid in the Northwest. There were about five states that had their power grid shut down back, oh, it'd be 10, 15 years ago. And the reason was there was one short in one of the lines on the power grid, one seemingly stupid little mistake. Problem, it shut down, I believe it was about five states. They had no power. Our system has become like that. We are so interconnected and so dependent that if one little thing goes wrong, we can have huge consequences. $300 trillion in derivatives is not a little thing. It's a massive thing. It is probably the single biggest financial reality in the country today. And it is in jeopardy if insurance rates rise too high All of a sudden, the people who have paid for the derivatives are going to call the bank and say, you owe me some money on my insurance policy. My derivative is functioning as an insurance policy. And we bet that if interest rates went over a certain rate, you had to pay me. Interest rates have gone over. You have to pay me. And the banks are going to say, you won't believe this, but it's like delivering our gold back to Germany. It may take us 7 years to pay off on this, if ever. I'm not sure that I doubt. In fact, I doubt that I'm making that explanation as coherent as I'd like to. But part of the problem with derivatives is that they are so massive and they are of such enormous variety that the word derivative becomes almost incomprehensible. We got them. They're here. They have no intrinsic value. That's part of the definition of the derivatives, and yet they have enormous potential impact on the economy, on the society. It may explain why the government has been holding interest rates down for most of the last 2 years. The reason the interest rates are down, we've been told the reason was to make it easier for Joe Sixpack to borrow money from the banks. And maybe that's true. Or maybe the reason is because we are so close to a debacle triggered by rising interest rates and causing derivatives to be claims to be made on the derivatives. Maybe that's the reason the government has been holding in interest rates down, down, down. Now, they're beginning to give up on that, and they're beginning to let the interest rates rise. And it may mean, who knows, maybe they just can't fight the tide anymore. Hard to say what this all means, but the danger is huge because the volume of derivatives is huge, and they are tangled up with everything we do in ways that we're all in jeopardy. It's a kind of madness. It's a kind of insanity. The derivatives have no intrinsic value, and yet, if they're shown to have no intrinsic value, guess what? The whole economy, not just our economy, the global economy could collapse. This is it's craziness. And it's part of the reason why, if you're sensible, once you begin to grasp the concept of derivatives, and it's not exactly easy, it's a mysterious and confusing concept. But once you begin to get it, you begin to understand how fragile the entire system is, how vulnerable we are to $300 trillion worth of derivatives in this country alone. And you begin to say, look, if derivatives have no intrinsic value and they are sufficient to trigger an economic collapse in this country, how do I protect myself? How do I protect myself from exposure to these derivatives? And we are all exposed. We're all in this derivative world right up to our ears. How do you get out of it? How do you minimize your exposure to the derivative world? And the answer is you put your wealth into something that has intrinsic worth. You don't want a paper document that has no intrinsic value. There's too many of them out there. We've talked about it for years on the program. There's too many to pay off on all of them. Where do you want to go? Get away from things, all things derivative. Take your wealth and put it in a tangible form that you can hold in the palm of your hand. And the obvious point, you know where I'm going with this, you're going to want gold. You're going to want silver. It will defend you against derivatives. And when everyone else is, when the derivatives finally fail, and they virtually have to, you can't have $300 trillion worth of derivatives and expect that they'll ever be paid. It is at minimum a massive fraud, a lie, an illusion, a deception, a legal fiction, but it's not real, and yet it's there, and we depend on it. How do you get out of this madness? One of the ways is you get yourself some gold. You say, I don't want any more of these damn paper derivatives. And when I say paper derivatives, we are talking about, for example, the shorts on the gold market at COMEX. are derivatives. We can make a good argument that the green pieces of paper in your wallet are derivatives. They have no intrinsic value, but their apparent value is derived from something else. The value of your paper dollars is derived from the confidence of the American people in those pieces of paper. It doesn't have intrinsic value. Take gold, it has intrinsic value. The whole gold market right now is essentially derivative. It's 99% paper and 1% real. The 99% paper value of the value that you see on the gold market, it's derived from the physical value of gold. It's all derivative. Again, difficult to explain. I saw where, I believe it was Bernanke, 3-4 years ago, they were talking about derivatives, and Bernanke admitted he didn't understand them. And he had to sit down and spend some serious time studying the concept to reach a point where he felt comfortable talking about derivatives. These are not easily understood, but it's like having giants running around in your backyard. You can hear them stomping their feet. Huh? And if you get stepped on them, you can be crushed. And again, a kind of insanity. And you want to return to sanity. One of the ways you do this is you get away from fractional reserve banking, you get away from fiat currency, you get away from derivatives, you deal with wealth that is tangible, intrinsically tangible. Gold and silver are two examples. Long time. I'm almost embarrassed by the explanation, the answer I've tried to offer on the question. It's too long, it's too complex, too confused. And yet, that's the nature of derivatives. They are complex, almost incomprehensible, and they are confusing. And all you can do is try to get clear as best you can. One of the ways, gold and silver.
Well,
Melanie?
The difficult part also about the derivatives is how they're priced. No one really knows the true value of them.
No.
And so they don't know what their losses are. If they have losses, they have no idea what the losses will be. There's no way they can hedge against the losses because they don't know what they're going to be. So that's why it's so important that they do all of this testing of the banks to see if they can handle. But still, they don't know. And that's the problem. That's why these stress tests that's why they become so important. It isn't to see how strong these banks are, to see if they can handle the losses on the derivatives. And they have a certain amount in there that they have to comply, but yet they still don't know the value of what the losses would be on these derivatives. So no way.
There's ultimately no insurance on the derivatives. The derivatives
may insure your
investment
something.
In bonds, but there's nothing to guarantee the derivatives are going to stand up. And if they fail, their consequences will be enormous and adverse for the American people, for the American economy, for the global economy. And you look at it, it's almost inevitable that we're going to see that failure. You know, whether we see it this year, will we see it 5 years from now? I don't know. But it seems inevitable that we will see the failure because the whole thing is a lie. It's a fraud. It's a deception. It's a fiction. It's an illusion. It has to fail. And when it does, the consequences will be massive. And the solution to avoid those consequences, you grab hold of something tangible to store your wealth. And again, that's gold and silver. Melody, we're out of time.
And people won't know that derivatives are failing. They're going to see the failures of other things.
Mm-hmm.
So people won't actually be reported. Oh, the derivatives are failing. Yeah. But you're going to see the bank closures, the runs, and everything else. What we've seen in Cyprus, wars.
I know.
That's what you're going to see.
Millions of people die. Worst case scenario. It's not inconceivable that all these derivatives collapse and we can see millions of Americans could die. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but it's not inconceivable. Nevertheless, we are out of time, so we got to go, folks. I'm Alfred Addis with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Be back next Monday. Thanks for listening. Hope the good Lord blesses you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.